Last week, I was on holiday in Dorset, which was very nice, and one afternoon we went for a wander around the seaside town of Swanage. One of the features of Swanage, like many seaside towns, and you may have been to Swanage, is that it has a Victorian pier. Over the years, of course, the pier has begun to fall into disrepair, and so there's an appeal underway to restore the pier and to safeguard it for the future. One of the ways that they've chosen to raise money to do that is by asking people to sponsor a plank. For a donation of £100, you can have a brass plaque about that sort of size fixed to a plank on the pier with a message of your choice. So we decided to pay the 90 pence entrance fee to the pier and to walk out to the end to enjoy the view. Well, I was several hundred feet out into the sea when I realised I hadn't actually paid any attention at all to the sea or to the sky, because I was completely transfixed by all the brass plaques on the floor. I was just reading them one after the other. And the plaques, as you can probably imagine, marked births, deaths, marriages. They remembered special people and special times in a place that was special to many. Some of the things were quite funny. Somebody had written so-and-so was here, like you might with graffiti. Some of them were quite personal messages that didn't mean anything to me, but clearly meant something to the person they were for, and some were quite sad as well. Each of those plaques is a contribution to the peer appeal, but it felt like they were more than that as well, because they represent hundreds, maybe even thousands of people, past and present, whose lives are connected with that place, with that town. And it feels like it's about their significance just as much as it's about the significance of the pier and safeguarding that for the future. Today in church, we're marking a Christian festival called All Saints' Day. It's a day on which we remember and give thanks to God for the many Christians who've gone before us. That's Christians who have been part of this church and this parish. Christians who may have played a significant role in our lives. Christians whose names will be remembered in history, and of course those who won't have their names remembered, and the great heroes and heroines of the Bible, all people of faith. And if we had a brass plaque for each person who'd been part of this church, then I rather suspect that the floor would be covered with the names and dates of faithful people who've had a significant part to play here, and whose life and contributions still make a difference today, even though we don't know who they were. Many people think that the word saint refers to a few special people, those who are sort of the extra good Christians, who've lived exemplary lives. But in the New Testament, the word is used to describe all Christians. It's not that those people have earned the title, but it says something about God's purposes for them, God's purposes for us. We're called saints because it says something about who we're meant to be and how we're meant to live. The New Testament word for saint is a Greek word, which is hagios. The Latin equivalent is sanctus, and it means to set apart or to sanctify or to make holy. So Christians are those who've been set apart by God and made holy by him in order to fulfill his purposes. I like that emphasis, that it's not about us doing good works to be called a saint. It's about God setting us apart and saying, I've put you aside for a special reason. On Sunday nights, one of the things that we like to do as a family is to watch not the X Factor, but the Antiques Roadshow. Oh yes, we're very cool in our house. But our children love the Antiques Roadshow. They love it when a member of the public brings in an ordinary-looking vase. They say, well, of course, we use it for storing our car keys, only to discover that it's worth tens of thousands of pounds. That's the bit, of course, that the children like, the big reveal, the, how much? Would you sell it? No, I wouldn't sell it. Would you sell it? Yeah, I'd sell it. It's horrible. And so on. But I think what makes it quite compelling viewing is to discover that something so ordinary is actually so precious, and that it's being used for a very humble task like storing keys. When the New Testament describes Christians as saints, it doesn't envisage each one of us becoming a renowned and revered saint like Joan of Arc or Francis of Assisi. It imagines us being more like the vase on the Antiques Roadshow, a precious vessel that God uses for the most humble tasks, incredible that he might take something of value and use it in something so very humble. A few weeks ago here in church, we held a funeral service for Linda Giel, someone who'd been part of this congregation for 35 years. And in this sermon, I talked about us not realizing the value of the humble tasks that we do in the service of God. And by calling us saints, the New Testament elevates the ordinary to become something special. When we do something, as Linda did, and we reckon made tens of thousands of cups of coffee over 30 years, those things become special to God and special to others. It makes me sad that we often wait until someone has died before we say publicly how much their life mattered, before we recognize before one another just how important the small things they did were. When I read the New Testament and when I hear Christians described as saints, I'm reminded how much our lives matter. How much Linda's life mattered, how much my life matters, how much your life matters in the smallest things that you do. God takes his precious, priceless vessels and he puts us to work in schools and offices and hospitals and countless places where those precious vessels might get chipped or broken or damaged. In the very early church, the local congregations would write to one another, eagerly describing the things that they had suffered for their faith. They would write to one another, sharing news about those who had lost their lives for the sake of the gospel, but celebrating that life. They weren't seeking to deny the pain or the cost of following Christ, and following Christ can be very costly. But they were trying to tell one another that against all the odds, their faith had been strengthened. That even though they had suffered, or the people they loved had suffered, that their faith had been strengthened. Somehow, in the midst of that, the way that those people lived had made God more believable or more credible. 10 days ago, I was at the funeral of another former church member. Several of us here were there for the funeral of the Reverend Barbara Kingston, someone who was part of this congregation for, I think, 20 years, and then she was part of the clergy team as well. Greatly loved by many, had people appreciated many things that she'd done, from being a nursery teacher right through to the things that she did as a church leader. And during the service, her son spoke in a very moving and honest way about the end of her life. And at the end of her life, she'd experienced a great deal of physical suffering. And it had clearly challenged his faith and made him ask hard questions about where God was in it all. And those who were there, I suspect, found it quite affecting to hear him speak in that way. And yet through it all, she remained so confident in God that somehow it made God more believable, more tangible, more credible. In our reading from Hebrews, we heard about the great cloud of witnesses, which is the phrase that is used to describe those Christians who have gone before and shown us something of God in the way that they have lived and died. The Barbaras of this world, the Lindas of this world, they are part of that great cloud of witnesses whose lives and deaths speak of God, whose stories echo the story of Christ, his own life and death. Suffering and hope inextricably bound together. And actually, we ourselves are becoming, will be, part of that great cloud of witnesses that's described by the author of Hebrews. We're not called saints because we're perfect, far from it. And in fact, those people listed by the author of Hebrews aren't listed there because they were perfect and because their lives were easy. They're listed there because their lives spoke something of God. And that's what we're called to do and to be as saints. We're set apart because our lives are to speak to others of God. I wonder if you think of yourself in that way. You might not, and yet the chances are that the people around you sense that your life speaks of God. Sense that the way that you conduct yourself, the way that you speak, the way that you act, or the way that you don't act, says something about the goodness and the nature of God. You may not feel that, but as I look out, I know lots about people's lives, and I see so much of God reflected in the people here. As I walked along the pier at Swanwich, I came to a place where the plaques ran out. I had to look at the sky at that point. But there were some neat shapes already cut into the wood, waiting for the next set of names to be added. The babies born, the anniversaries celebrated, the loved ones lost, the holidays remembered. I wonder, what would you put on your plaque? How would you want your time in this church to be remembered and marked and celebrated? What might it say? I said Linda's would say thousands of cups of coffee, amongst other things. I'm very grateful to God for the hundreds, if not thousands, of Christians who have lived and died in our parish. Most of their names are no longer remembered. There'll be very few that are remembered. I doubt that in 100 years' time that my name will be remembered. But church exists still today because of each of those saints, because of the part that they played, and they are the people that we celebrate on All Saints' Day. Never underestimate the value of their contribution, those people whose plaques might fill our floor this morning. But also never underestimate the value of your contribution, of how much your life matters to God and to one another. Amen.